This is Gordon Blake and the Higher Powered Radio Program. Tonight, I'd like to welcome everyone to our airwaves. And my special guest tonight is Sal Monaco.
Yep, that's me, Sal, the Observer Monaco, host of the Oracle of Enlightenment radio show. How are you, Gordon?
Who is a very fine and upcoming filmmaker and television producer.
Yeah, here's hoping.
And welcome, Sal.
Thank you very much, Gordon. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's good to be back into Buffalo, for one thing, and dealing with people from the New York and surrounding areas. So, Sal, tell me, what have I been missing in Buffalo in the past 6 to 8 months?
Just the usual stuff. A lot of festivals, especially during the warm months. You know, we have great theaters here in Buffalo, and there have been a few independent films made here over the last couple of years. You know.
What have you seen as far as the in theater and local Buffalo, New York theater?
Well, there are a lot of small theaters I've noticed, that like the Ghostlight Theater in North Tonawanda, and there's a theater in Tonawanda that operates out of a school, and you know, a lot of the Subversive Theater, the Alt Theater, which both operate out of the Great Arrow Building on Elmwood and Pierce Arrow. The Pierce Arrow Building, I believe. And, you know, a lot of really small theaters that are struggling, but I think produce really good a product.
Actually, I happened to be speaking to you on the phone, and the night before, I had found the Alt Theater website.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't tell me too much, and I called you the next day, and just out of the blue, you mentioned that you had gone to see a production there of a, maybe you can tell me more about.
This whole season has been wonderful at the Alt Theater. They've done some amazing stuff.
It was a musical version of a
horror movie. It was called, it was a zombie type, it was called Evil Dead the Musical. And they basically took the first two movies and part of the third one and squeezed it into a play. And they're actually doing it again in October. And it's a fabulous show. And of course, the Alt Theater is owned by my good friend Amy Taravella, and she always does really amazing shows.
And hasn't it actually been won awards in theater circles of their production that you're speaking?
I don't know about that, but they've really done a good job with it, and a good job with several of their productions. So I'm not up on the latest awards, unfortunately.
Yeah, what kind of stood out to you in the production of it?
What kind of what?
What stood out as outstanding?
The acting was phenomenal. The directing was really good. The makeup and special effects were really good. In fact, they had something unique. You could pay a few extra dollars to sit in a certain area and actually get sprayed with blood during some of the nastier scenes in the play. And it was, let's just say it's not a play for kids, folks.
Yeah.
But it's really, really good play. I mean, in the last year, they've done Rocky Horror. They've done some really good stuff called Light and Shadows. And they did one play, which I thought was interesting, that involved a time traveler, and it was just fascinating stuff. It also involved vampires and superheroes and murderers, and it was just a wild play.
Yeah, a different scene for theater. Actually, new ground.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, vampire, lesbian, snake charmers were part of it too. So again, not for kids.
Well, maybe you can even get some of these people into your some of your films. They may be.
Well, Amy Taravella, the owner, is one of the stars of my movie, and she'll be reprising her role in my TV series. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to get it to sign any of the actors from the play, as they were all very busy. But it was a phenomenal cast, and I'm wondering if they're all going to come back for the show in October, or if they're going to be recast, depending on how everything goes.
Wow. And Amy is in your... What role does she play in your television?
She was one of the stars of the movie, and she's reprising the role in the TV show. It's the character of Sandy Rogers. She was kind of my homage to offbeat cinema with my friends over at Channel 7. The character is a beatnik poet. She basically does really nice poetry and wears beatnik clothes all the time. And she's involved in the love triangle in the movie between the two radio DJs and a radio talk show hosts. And it's really one of the good storylines of the movie. But then again, I'm the director, so I'll say they're all good. So
that's the way to go. And it seems as if you're dealing with not only talented people, but also versatile people, if she's running her own theater company.
That is correct. And her sister, Julianne Grime, was the star of my movie, the main character, who played Donna McLean, the girl who was fighting to get her own radio show and dealing with the alternative community of Buffalo, trying to utilize them to help her. When the movie's done, I know it's been taking longer than I expected with the editing and the technical issues and everything and the music. But when it comes out, it will be a product that everyone will be happy with. Because it's really a multi-level film. You know, it's like nothing, it's tightly written, nothing is wasted. And Beyond the Mainstream is also kind of my homage to Frank Capra's It's a Wonderful Life. It's a show about how one person's life touches everyone else's lives, and even though it focuses on a main character, it's really about a whole town of people, you know, kind of like It's a Wonderful Life. And like I said, it's very tightly written. There's just nothing wasted. Everything in the movie has a purpose for being there. Yeah. You know? Uh-huh.
Well, you know, as you mentioned, it's taking a little bit longer than you had hoped, but
yes.
But what would you say some of the problems that you've been running into that are?
Well, I mean, with any independent film where you're not paying people and you don't have a real budget to work with, most of the problems at first were with casting, but. I learned my lesson on that quickly. And then there was technical issues, like, you know, making sure the sound and the lighting were good and everything else. And now I think because my partners and I, it was kind of trial by fire. I mean, I thought that all my years of doing theater and doing TV, you know, public access TV, network affiliate TV, radio, I thought that would all prepare me to be a director on a feature film, you know, and it didn't. I mean, film is not even the short films I've done or working on other people's feature films prepared me for what it takes to be a director of a feature film, especially an independent one. I mean, if someone handed me even like $50,000 and said, here, go make a movie, then it might have been easier. But as we were working with pretty much, you know, what the average Buffalo filmmaker uses, which is practically nothing, it was our first film. And despite, you know, my training in school and my training on other people's films and making the short films and everything else, it did not at all prepare me for what I dealt with making a feature film. You know, I mean, it's every medium is a totally different animal. Whether you're making a TV series, a TV talk show, a radio talk show, or a radio play, everything is different. And you gotta learn all the good, the bad, and the ugly when all the interning and practicing is not gonna do any good. You gotta actually do it in order to actually learn it. I mean, that's the best way I can put it, because things happened that I never anticipated were going to happen, that I never thought could possibly happen. But, I mean, I dealt with it, you know. We wound up having to throw out 2 months of footage because of different issues, but we were actually able to film the entire movie in 10 months with only a few scenes later that needed to be filled in and a few dubovers and a few things. But principal photography and major reshoots took about 10 months. And then from there on in, it was just a lot of other things. And, you know, you yourself did a couple of scenes that were done after the fact. And you just discover that sometimes things aren't working as well as you want them to. And as it is my first film, I think that I'm probably not going to be as happy with it as I wish I could be. But I learned a lot so that anything from here on in is going to be much, much better. That's all I've got to say. I mean, if you're lucky enough to do really well with your first film, that's great. And I have a feeling that this film is going to do good. I'm not saying it's going to be a flop or anything like that. It's going to be a good film, but I really wanted it to be a great film. And, I mean, it's going to be up to you and everybody else who was in it, as well as the people watching it, to decide if it's a good film or a great film. The acting and the storyline are very upper level. Mm-hmm. The tech, on the other hand, is, I'm not going to say amateurish, because it's not in any way that, but it's not high level either. So it's going to be up to, I mean, there were times where I did things that may or may not look right, and with lighting and with sound and things, but it's going to end up, you're going to end up looking like, you know, it's going to be end up people deciding if, you know, if this is artsy or if this is just what people, you know, some people are going to say, oh, I think this was really artsy, and other people might think, oh, he's just trying to cover up a mistake. No, if there's a mistake, I'll admit that there's a mistake. There were certain things we did to be artsy, and people may think it looks like a mistake, but it really isn't, you know? We did a lot of things, we did a lot of experiments, we did a lot of different things, and as I said, it was trial by fire. We were kind of learning as we went along, and I've learned so much since then, since I started filming the TV series recently, which is based on the movie. The TV series is called The Mighty Beyond, and it's based on Beyond the Mainstream. And people ask me, well, why are you starting to film the TV series when the movie's not even done? And I'm like, because I need to. I mean, I've been spending the last year and a half fighting with the learning things about tech and everything so that I didn't have to rely on somebody else to do the tech. You know, most of my directing experience was in theater, so trying to learn all the tech so that I could be a master of everything and not just the directing, the acting, and the casting and sets and everything else actually made me make, actually knowing everything actually makes you a better director, in my opinion. Well, what do you think, as someone who's worked on so many Hollywood productions and everything?
I didn't realize that your background was theater also. That's where I come from. So it was really interesting to me, but I thought that that was the important thing. They actually have a background in theater, and then because I love film, and I think that, you know, there's nothing more beautiful than film, you know, in its presentation and just presence, you know, of sitting there watching good film, but also having the legitimate theater background. I believe that you came from the right way. I didn't realize that then you've done theater.
And Yes. I've directed several plays over the years.
Cool.
I've directed plays, Rocky Horror Picture Shows, dinner theater, variety shows, you know, all kinds of different things.
Wonderful. Yeah, it's, I think, a great, great background to have to go into that. It just gives you a whole different place to get performance out of people and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And besides, you also learn and meet wonderful people to work with, you know, and yeah, well, I, you know, from working on your film, I do, you know, appreciate what you were doing and what you were up against. And didn't you have to also being a writer myself, didn't you have to kind of change writers in the middle of kind of midstream?
Well, no. My main writer stuck with me all the way through, and so did my comedy doctor. We had to constantly rewrite things, obviously, because we had to change. If we decided to replace an actress or an actor, or we decided to change a storyline, you know, it was. If you look at the original script and look at the movie, yes, there's many, many major differences. I mean, the skeleton is the same, but there's many differences. But I mean, it was my ideas, and my writer just scripted them out. Whereas for the TV series, I'm actually writing the scripts myself, and he's editing them.
Oh.
So, big difference. We kind of reversed roles for the TV series. because I wanted to hone my writing as well as my technical skills. Because, you know, on the movie, I was directing, acting, editing the scripts, taking care of the casting, the costumes and the sets and locations, obviously. But my partner and the other people we got were dealing with the important tech, you know, everything from lighting to sound to camera angles, and of course the other people were dealing with the actual writing of the script. And I learned that in order to be a really good director, I needed to know all of that, and I eventually need to learn how to edit as well. Once I've gotten the proper equipment and the proper training. But it was one of those things where it was one step at a time, you know. And unfortunately, it takes longer than anyone wants it to. And, you know, people are going to leave because they don't believe in the project anymore. People are going to back out because other things come up in their lives. You know, those things are going to happen. But you find that it's the hardcore ones who stay with you that keep you going. People who continue to support you year after year and enjoy the project. I mean, I found a girl who wasn't even a real actress at a book launch. She was playing a costume competition. She won the competition, and I asked her if she wanted to have this small role in my movie. And it turns out she was an aspiring actress, as well as a gymnast, and she had made some small films with her family, and she really wanted this part, you know, and it was supposed to be just a small part, but she was so great to work with and such a good actress, natural actress, that I just kept writing her in and writing her in and writing her in, and when other things came up, I would be like, okay, let's let her do this and everything else. Her name is Megan Kaiser, and she's a wonderful actress, and she wound up going from bit part to star in the movie, and then we wound up focusing a good portion of the TV series around her because she's just, and she was only 14. That was what I thought was great.
And her name is Megan
Kaiser.
Tiger?
Kaiser.
Oh, Kaiser.
And she also appeared in one of my short films, too, and you find it's, you know, and her parents are wonderful. You know, they helped out with tech, and they bring her to the set and keep an eye on her and everything. And, you know, the support, and her sister came and appeared in the short film. I mean, in one of the short films, the support I get from her and her family is just phenomenal, you know. And the support I got, I earlier mentioned Julianne Grimes and Amy Taravella, and the support they've given me, if it wasn't for those two, Beyond the Mainstream wouldn't have happened. Because Amy and Julie were really the ones who stepped up, and Julie stepped into the title role, Amy stepped into the, brought us Julie, actually, after stepping into a role, one of the main roles, and she did a lot of things to help us out. So, and I mean, I could spend an entire hour just thanking people for helping me make the film, you know, including you for the scenes you gave me. And I could thank James Walker for providing funding. I could thank my partners, Mary and Tom, for all that they put into it. And, you know, I could thank every one of the actors and actresses that were part of it. I had 82 actors, including the rabbit.
There you go.
And I have a large cast to draw from for the TV series as well. So
That's important. Actually, I was just thinking of that when you were in writings by Gordon Craig and Steinberg, and an old text on theater, is both of them referred to the point where the true artists of the future in theater was the person who was going to be able to bring all the elements to theater and right. be able to, that's basically what you're talking of with, you know, getting these people from all different places, you know, not just set theater company actors or whatever. You're bringing different actors and different...
Well, some people are theater actors, some people are film and TV actors, mm-hmm. some people are improv actors, you know, improvis artists. Some people are just people we brought in off the street who were aspiring. And, you know, I'm not saying any one group is better than the other. I'm saying that it depends on the person, you know. It doesn't matter what kind of pedigree you have or how much training you have. If you're willing to work hard at it and be committed to it, then you can be just as good as the person who's made 20 films and has, or the person who has a theater degree.
That's right. That's right. Keeps on changing. And, you know, you're drawing from a lot of different things, and I think you will, you know, eventually get your film out. A lot of film productions, they have taken a long time. Two that are spring to mind are Cleopatra went way over time and way over budget, and Apocalypse Now, you know, mm-hmm. went way over time. Sometimes without any, you know, pre-notification from rain for months to Martin Sheen having a heart attack. You know, there's just the unforeseeable complications of making a production. But I think you're doing it, Sal. That's, you know, that's... You're sticking with it, and perseverance is really important. You're holding, sticking to your guns, and that, you know, like many people just throwing their hands up and dropping the project, you know, in midstream or whatever. Because this is beyond the mainstream, right?
Right.
That's right. Not mid, drop it midstream. But anyway, it was a...
I'm not stopping till I hit the big times. Till I can visit you out there in L.A.
That's right. You have to come out there. If there's a lot of new film festivals that are opening that people don't realize. You know, from there's even a Malibu Film Festival now, which, you know, simply didn't exist even 5 years ago. But there's constantly new ones, and you know, there's just so much that people want to know about film, and so many people that are just like avid film lovers in the Los Angeles area, and you know, it's the film capital of the world, so it's if they can overcome all the budget problems and the runaway production, it's I'm sure it, you know, will reign as the throne of productions. And
well, I mean, LA is the focus in the US for movies. And I guess Vancouver is the focus for Canada. Well, and then on this side, we have New York City and Toronto.
Yeah.
As focuses for TV and for theater and everything.
Hopefully, you know, there'll be enough productions that we can share, and everyone can, you know, put out their own productions and within their own guidelines and... They had their own flavors and whatever. It's a beautiful area. You know, every one of the cities you mentioned is, you know, very unique in itself.
Mm-hmm.
And the two, well, I'm surprised that more productions aren't being done. And I think two of the great cities are San Francisco and Boston also. And I think there's a 2-1 written markets. And Buffalo is got something that I think no other place has, and hopefully the people will discover that is a place. You know, a couple of people have. I mean, the natural Robert Redford made a fine film in Buffalo, and so did James Caan, actually, with Hide in Plain Sight. So, you know, it can be used, and it's not overused. That's what it is. There's so many places that I've never seen on film that are in Buffalo that are just, like, so unique, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the psychiatric center, the train terminal, places, you know, that people haven't even thought of. Kaisertown here, and
well, when I worked on Greg Lamberson's Slime City Massacre, they used the area by the terminal, and it was really well done.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, more power to them. You know, that's what. Those are those wonderful little places that nobody really knows about that are just unique. I just happened to be speaking with a sort of a rock historian the other day of some place that at one point was used for concerts, except that they imported sand, and in the sand there were rattlesnake eggs, so they had to close down the venue. But it was a place that both of us had hung out when we were young. We'd ridden motorcycles around there. It's like a caves and gypsum mines, and it's kind of near the city of Akron. At one time it was a concrete company, and just different things. There were kings of the road living there. That we used to go out there, and at that time underage drinking and shooting guns and stuff, and we stopped because we figured out that there were these older kings of the road that were living there. And he talked about at the bottom of this one tower where they found a deer skeleton, mm-hmm. where the deer had fallen down like hundreds of feet into this well and wasn't able to get out. But it's a kind of a unique place. Sometime if we get the cameras together or whatever, I'll take you out there and show you. I think you'd get some really interesting shots out there. It's out towards the Akron, Clarence area. But Sal, you know, this is... as you know, my virgin broadcasts of higher powered radio, and myself, Gordon Blake, really is, you know, more than honored to have you as a guest, and very thankful that you decided to be my first guest. You know, it could have been somebody. Like the chief of police in Buffalo trying to arrest me and take me away. So it's good to have a friend and a fellow filmmaker, and I never didn't realize at this point a director in theater and dinner theater. And
well, if people want to see Gordon's last interview he did on my TV talk show, or hear his first radio interview he did with me, they can check it out at www.oracleofenlightenment.com.
Oracle of Enlightenment, wonderful.
They can see your TV interview and your radio interview.
Okay. And gosh, this is the virgin voyage of higher powered radio with Gordon Blake, and I've had a wonderful guest in Sal Monaco, and I'm sure that Sal's going to consider getting himself back on the boards, and some of his productions may be on the boards, and maybe that is something we could film together, do a joint production, and bring things up to date. Is there anything in the future? We'll kind of do this last minute of this program and what your take on the future is.
The future of what? The program, you mean?
Yeah. Of your works and
oh, well, I will put the movie out. I'm working on the TV series. I'm keeping my radio show going and my TV talk show. We'll be coming back soon, and I will hopefully get the audio plays back up and running. We did three of them last year with another group, and so there's a lot of different things I'm working on. It's just, unfortunately, the slowness of the process tends to not sit well, but you got to do what you got to do.
Well, thank you, Sal, and that's what... I hope to do in the future. This radio program is bring you people as interesting as Sal Monaco, and kind of bring the higher powered radio to you, my friends and fellow countrymen and of this great earth that we live on. And I'd like to also thank Home of the Future for letting me start this new program. Thank you.
Thank you, Gordon.